Good morning. I'm Jack Peterson here with Phil Huff, the executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, and Gary Kraft. He is a pilot with EcoFlight. We are recording this interview in advance, but on the day that we're recording it, actually, we just hours ago got off of a plane that Gary was piloting over the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness and Lake Pend'Oreille and the areas of North Idaho that we're all so familiar with. And it was a wonderful treat that Gary was able to spare some time for us to come in and talk about EcoFlight and what it's like being a pilot with that organization. With that being said, Gary, can you tell us what EcoFlight is for those who haven't heard of it before?
Thanks, Jack. EcoFlight, this is our 21st year of conservation flying. And what we do is we work with our partner groups like Scotchman Peaks, Friends of Scotchman Peaks, and we provide the aerial perspective of any issues that we're working on or that our partners are concerned with. And we find that the aerial perspective oftentimes brings people together and creates good conversations that hopefully will create better outcomes for whatever the issue is.
It's been going for 21 years. Were you around at the beginning?
I wasn't. I've been around for about 10 or 11 years. Mm-hmm. EcoFlight was founded in 21 years ago by Bruce Gordon. He kind of coined the term conservation flying, and that's what we call what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Is we're using small airplanes to advocate for the environment.
Yeah. And how do you feel you do that? How do you feel like getting people up in the air overlooking a particular area affects the conversations and the way people feel about it?
Yeah, well, getting people, sometimes it's just getting them away from a desk to see the issue in person. If some people have not been able to hike or bike or otherwise or walk into an area that is under consideration for some protection or needs some protection, we find that the aerial perspective really opens up the whole issue in a new way that people haven't seen.
Mm. Where are you guys based out of?
We're based in Aspen, Colorado.
And what kind of range do you cover with your
We're all flight. Over the Intermountain West, so mm-hmm. we're everywhere from Arizona up to the Canadian border, where we'll be in a couple of days, and all over the West, wherever our partners ask us to come help out. We're a 501(c), so we work on donations and grants, and we just go wherever we think that we can be of assistance with our partners.
Mm-hmm. How many planes?
We have two airplanes.
And how many pilots?
Two pilots right now.
Well, okay.
Although we're working on a third.
Uh-huh. And how many flights? How busy are you?
Oh, on a busy year, we'll fly, mostly between May and November when the weather's nicer. It's easier to get people up, especially in the mountains. We can fly as many as 500 hours in a year.
Yeah.
And it's really a half a year. So that's quite a lot of flying.
Huh. I have no concept. I mean, I was up there. I was up in the airplane, and it was a real treat. I think I left the studio here at about 9:30 in the morning, and I got here about noon. I have no real concept of how long I was up in the air, though. I know it must have been less than 2.5 hours, but you could tell me I was up there for
it
10 minutes.
It was significantly
or
less.
A half.
We covered many hundreds of thousands of acres in less than 40 minutes. Which
okay.
is mm-hmm. the unique ability that we have with the small airplanes mm-hmm. is to get a small group. In our case, we went up three times, five passengers on each flight, and we showed them some territory that could not be seen that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the aerial perspective.
Yeah.
It was quite stunning this morning.
It was a beautiful day for it. A little bit of clouds, but perfect kind of fall day to see that. How did you get involved, Gary?
I got involved as a volunteer, I think in 2012. The founder, Bruce Gordon, started a program called Flight Across America. The original goal was to fly from Alaska to Washington, D.C., with several airplanes and groups of students. Bruce was involved. This was an idea between Bruce and John Denver, the late John Denver.
The John Denver.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he's a pilot, was a pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the goal was to educate and advocate for the environment for a variety of concerns and to do it yearly. And we've been carrying on that tradition and doing it yearly. This year we did it in April. It was only 3 days and we went all over the West looking at water issues, water shortages. And we've kind of focused over the Southwest, Lake Powell and the Colorado River. But we do a different issue every year. And we have good luck with it. We fly students and journalists and legislatures and landowners, any interested parties. And again, our goal is to create conversations in hopes of fostering favorable outcomes for the environment.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Gary Kraft. He's a pilot with EcoFlight. I'm Jack Peterson. We're here with Phil Huff as well, who's wearing his Friends of Scotchman Peaks hat this morning. Phil is the executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks. And Phil, how did you get hooked up with these guys?
I think it was about 10, 11 years ago when I was first approached by someone in Bruce's organization. I think it was actually one of the people that worked with him who called and said, "We're going to be in your area for the Western Governors Conference." It was at the Coeur d'Alene Resort. And they said, "We have some space available on a couple flights on the last day. If you want to bring a few people along, we're flying out of Coeur d'Alene. Would there be any interest?" And at the time, there was a lot of interest in getting local elected officials, local media, more familiar with the Scotchman Peaks, with the lay of the land, as Gary was alluding to and as you experienced this morning. It's one thing to have some knowledge of the area from looking at a map or even from hiking on the ground to the trail system that touches the edges of it. It's another to fly over it and have that really put into perspective about what this place means, where it sits on the landscape, just how awesomely rugged it is. And when we can get local elected officials, local appointed officials, local media up, we can then start to perhaps not only inspire but open their eyes to what the possibilities are for protecting this rugged wild place and looking down at the landscape and going, yeah, that's really the best use for this area. And so things start to shift. I think within every person I've seen go up, things have started to shift. And then conversations flow afterwards. Having the opportunity to see a number of people go up, I think this is the fifth flight. And I'll say maybe one of the smoothest, if Bruce is listening. Fifth time I've been personally up and watched other passengers go through these moments of epiphany where something happens, the light bulb goes off, and then when we land, they're in a semi-state of awe, not quite ready to talk about it. But in a week, a few days, a week, 2 weeks, we sit down, we have coffee, we talk about the experience, what it meant, what it means, and I think it starts to open avenues up.
Yeah. And I imagine that's the kind of experience that the organization hopes to inspire in other all across the Mountain West, or all across the country, I suppose.
Exactly.
Gary, this was your first time flying over the Scotchman Peaks?
First time to Sandpoint, yeah.
So what was your experience as the first time, you know, first time being up here? Anything strike you as very familiar in terms of what you saw, or very different from other places you've been, or what catches your very experienced eye from flying over wilderness all over the place?
Well, you know, every landscape is somewhat unique. Sandpoint is obviously very beautiful with the water, but just watching all the tributaries that feed into the lake and how everything is interconnected really gives you a good idea of how everything is interconnected and really what it means to protect certain areas. And it's really impressive.
Yeah. when you got involved, you were already you had been a pilot beforehand?
Yeah, I've been a pilot since 1995. Yeah. And I'm also a flight instructor.
Professionally? That was your
Yep,
by career?
My other trade, yes.
Yeah. What was your background, if you don't mind my asking? What did you do before you were working with EcoFlight?
Well, I've lived in Aspen, Colorado, where mm-hmm. we're based, for 20-plus years. And I went to college in Colorado Springs, Colorado College, and have been attracted to the mountains ever since I was a kid. And that's kind of what steered me towards going to school in the mountains and funneled me to Aspen and got me involved with EcoFlight.
Hmm. Phil, who all went up this time? Anybody you care to mention?
Some names we'll keep confidential because the flights weren't meant to be media opportunities, but a chance for some mm-hmm. of our, again, local officials to have a quiet moment to see it personally firsthand. But mm-hmm. We did invite some members of the media, yourself included, because mm-hmm. everyone knows nothing but a good view of the Scotsman translates to radio.
Yeah.
But I don't think he'd mind us mentioning Chris Bessler from mm-hmm. Sandpoint Magazine, Keoki Publishing, was able to join us, as well as individuals mm-hmm. from the Bonner County Daily Bee and Sandpoint Reader, both their regular reporters as well as some of their columnists. And they'll all have a unique perspective. So I think, you know, Emily, who writes regularly for the Reader, will approach her experience from a way different standpoint than, say, Zach, mm-hmm. the hard reporting versus the more emotive response.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how that manifests in their work in the period to come.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Yeah. I'm having seen it now, and I expect that we'll see some reporting this weekend. Or we'll see some written words about it this week and next week, probably. And I wonder how other people will react to it. Yeah. I personally, I've never been up in an airplane over Sandpoint or over anywhere over here at all. And I was very...
Well, we heard a little bit about your first response. Dig a little deeper, Jack. Tell us what it was like being in a small airplane, eyeball to eyeball with billiard table.
It was not... first of all, it was not as terrifying as I thought at all. I was very nervous... A little nervous beforehand. I was not quite sure about this. Takeoff went very smoothly. It was takeoff was the only part where I felt a little nervous at all. And after that, I was just fascinated the whole time. I think we got up. You could tell when we were off the air or off the ground because suddenly you kind of felt it sway a little bit more freely than you would ordinarily. Feel it, and I kind of felt that in my stomach, like, oh, we are not touching anything at all right now. But anyway, then it up went right. A train was going past right as we were taking off. It was kind of very picturesque, the fall colors and stuff. And then over the lake, it is so close to get when you can cut across the lake like that. It's funny how, I mean, seemed like we were over there right away. Seemed like it to me anyway. That mm-hmm. just. Right across the lake, we passed another small plane, and it was, I think, Rebecca helped out with some kind of narration of what we were overlooking. It was spectacular, and it was a lot more rugged, I think, than I was expecting, than I was aware of, even though I have been over there. I've hiked a little bit. I've been up the Scotsman Peak Trail. And of course, you know, just drive in a car and stuff, driving around there, parking and doing a little, just playing around. Never been that far back into it. Never seen that much of it. And it is stunning. The landscape is very dramatic, and it is all kind of hidden from you when you're over here on this side of the lake, and even when you're on that side of the lake, but on this side of the mountains, you don't really see what's up and over that ridge. And then, yeah.
I think one of the unique things about the Scotsman Peaks, the interior of it, you can't see from the exterior.
Yeah.
So the top of Spar Peak, you can't see from anywhere outside of the Scotsman Peaks. And when you're flying over Spar Peak, you look down and go, what a pinnacle, what a panorama from that pinnacle, and how glad I am that I've visited it to be able to see 360 degrees around it. And you don't know that place exists if you're on the outside road system. You can't see it looking in. You have to be in it in the moment or flying over it. And in it in the moment is a big time commitment.
Yeah.
This was 35 minutes, 40 minutes in the air. To hike up there and back would be all day. You'd leave the studio at 6 a.m. You'd be back at 9 p.m.
Yeah. Which is, of course, I mean, that is kind of the selling point. That's what you want to protect about it. It also makes it hard to convey that to people around here. And, of course, people in Washington, other decision makers that would be interested in protecting the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness.
We, my wife Deb and I, lead a hike every October to the pinnacle of Scotchman Peak. It's a tradition. We've done it 19 years in a row now. We did it yesterday. So just yesterday, we were on top of Scotchman Peak. In fact, I was looking down to see if anyone left any sandwich wrappers. But it makes me appreciate just how tired my legs are today and why they're so tired. And looking down at the steepness of the canyon that the Little Spark Creek drainage goes through made me appreciate why my legs were so tired last August when we went up there.
Yeah.
It's tough country to get around in. You have a hard time going from point A to point B as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it certainly is. It is, I mean, I speaking only for myself, I know when I was up there, I did start to think just sort of what would it be like if this wasn't protected, if this if this was, open to logging or something like that, which I suppose would be the only thing it would be open for.
Or land sales for mansions or tramways, and that would be a real shame because... As hard as it is and as nice as it is, we want to get people into it. An aerial tramway to the top of those peaks would destroy the experience, too.
Yeah. It is incredible that it's that it's still there and pretty much untouched. And I guess it's because it's so challenging to get to that it's persevered all these years.
And there's an interrelationship between mountains and water, and where the two meet is often, to me, where the magic of wild country happens. And flying over Lake Pendere to get to the Scotchman Peaks really makes you appreciate again how those margins come together. And every time I've flown over Lake Pendere, I'm struck by just how alive it seems. You look down today and the swirls of flow through it that are creating the silt clouds. And the last time I was up with Bruce, it was earlier in the year, and you know there were bed mats of pollen from the pine trees layering over the lake. And you just feel that the lake is alive. It's, it's really one of the engines that drives the whole relationship we have to the natural world here.
Yeah. It's cool to see. I mean, in this experience right now, we flew over the Clark, we flew over the big deep part of the lake, over the Clark Fork Basin, kind of watching that flow in. And then on the way back, we saw kind of the powerful Clark Fork River and the dam, which the Cabinet Dam, right? Is that what's up there?
Cabinet Gorge.
And then kind of on the coming back on the other side, the Pack River, which just flows so lazily into just the opposite, you know, just a zigzag back and forth. Like it's in no hurry to get to the lake at all. It's such a interesting thing to see almost all at once.
Yeah, I was struck as well by the oxbows in the river. Yeah.
It was a really a wonderful experience. And thank you for
wondering if, Gary, you ever get tired of going to work. If this is your office every day and it's ever-changing.
I don't get tired of seeing it from the air. I do get jealous because some of these places I have not and will not get to see from the ground. And that's the opposite problem that I have, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to have you come back so we can hike up into the area.
Love it.
Gary, here's a question I would not have dared ask you before the flight, but I'll ask you now. What's have you had any interesting close calls or kind of dodgy experiences in your years of flying now?
No, with EcoFlight, we're very conservative with the weather, and we don't try to take passengers up when there's any concern for safety. But if you talk to anyone that's been flying for as long as I have, and I have over 9,000 hours, mostly in the Mountain West, there's always a time or two that you've put yourself in a situation where, in hindsight, you wish you had done things differently.
Yeah. yeah, I'm sure. I know in my head, as we were going through the clouds or just over the clouds, I knew that we were high enough and everything. You've got an altimeter that tells you where we are and where the terrain is. I mean, you know where the tallest peaks are. But also I was kind of like, oh, this is, you know, as we flew into the clouds, not knowing in exactly where the mountains were myself, I was kind of like, oh,
Near the clouds, not
yeah.
quite in.
No, not, yeah, yeah, but kind of skimming right over the top of them there. I don't know. Kind of yeah. wanted to know if anything was going to pop out unexpectedly.
We do a pretty good job briefing the routes beforehand and planning them out.
Yeah.
And maintaining situational awareness with the terrain
mm-hmm.
and trying to show everybody on board the intended features. And I think we did a pretty good job today with mm-hmm. our three flights.
Yeah.
I think everyone seems to feel real comfortable. I know beforehand yeah. there were two people who identified to me that they were very nervous. And one of them even confided that their work partner evidently has a lot of experience with flying and checked out your record and the actual specific planes record before getting on. And
that's funny. And
felt very comfortable. So
good for them.
Yeah. So they did their due diligence and still showed up.
I didn't. I did not do my due diligence.
You just trusted Phil saying, hey, he's a safe pilot.
Well, yes. I thought it'll be fine. I trusted Phil. I thought about going and getting my life insurance up to date, but I didn't even do that. I just said, you're worried about nothing. So that was fine.
I think I happened to mention an offhand way to Deb this morning. Oh, yeah, I'm going up in the plane today. Keep your fingers crossed.
Uh-huh. It was very cool. I told some friends who live out in Clark Fork that we were heading over, and I think got a picture of the plane from the ground as we were going over Clark Fork, which I don't know. So here we are. We're talking with Gary Kraft, a pilot with EcoFlight, and Phil Huff, executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. And kind of winding down this conversation, I think, EcoFlight, what's next? How do people get in touch? Next time you'll be in Sandpoint or the area, if people are interested in learning more, what do we know about? What can you say?
Yeah, we encourage anyone that has issues or would like to see some protections for any environmental issue to get a hold of us. We're ecoflight.org. And we're a small group. There's six people in the office, and we encourage people to reach out. The website has a wealth of photos and videos. We took videos as well today from the airplane, and over issues spanning over 20 years. So we encourage people to go to the website and make contact with us, and that's how we hooked up with Phil, and that's how we create flights.
And I'd say sign up for the newsletter. Even if individuals aren't themselves immediately responsible for an issue that they're not going to go out next month, next year, it's still always fascinating to read Bruce's accounts, his write-ups of the work being done and the places, and you can live vicariously through the newsletters.
Absolutely.
I do think it's interesting, and I'd love to probe Gary just a little bit more, the fact that the organization focuses in on places like the Scotchman Peaks. When you're flying there, you know, have to be a tremendous source of inspiration for you and new information. But I'm curious too about the flights between. It's a big area between here and Aspen. You're flying over places just simply to get to the next one. You were sharing your destination for your next flight with us at lunch, and the route between here and Libby is interesting in and of itself, even not the portion over the Scotchman's.
And that will be a new one for me. And that is one of the interesting things about my missions is I'm always seeing something new.
Mm-hmm.
And our founder, Bruce, has been doing this for a long, long time. And there is probably no one more familiar with the Intermountain West than he is. And I'm enjoying learning and getting to where he is.
Yeah, that mental map of the physical West and what is where and what it means and how it's all connected.
Yeah.
From having driven a lot of the roads and hiked in a lot of the backcountry, I feel like I've started to develop a sense of it, but really from the edges, it would be, I think, fascinating to have a career flying over all of the Intermountain West.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would. I didn't even know Libby had an airstrip. where you could.
They do. It's apparently about 8 or 9 miles southeast of town. Mm-hmm. I don't think the facility on the ground is as nice as Granite Aviation.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to our local aviation center. Uh-huh. But they do have an airport that you can fly in and out of.
Well, okay. Good. Is somebody going to be there to greet you, or do you just land and put a padlock on the plane and hope it's still there in the morning?
No, our partners will be there. Yeah.
The plane itself, did you guys pick these airplanes because they are, I mean, the field of view up there as a passenger, I felt like I could see everything.
We do. We use Cessna Turbo 210s.
Uh-huh.
And the reason we use them is most Cessnas have a wing strut coming down, connecting the wing to the fuselage structurally. The 210 is unique that it has a cantilevered wing, and that allows for better viewing the high mm-hmm. wing and no struts in the way. So that's why we use the 210. It also has 5 passenger seats, and it goes pretty fast. So we can do the ferry flights in between Colorado and California, or Colorado and Idaho, wherever we're going, we can cover a lot of territory fairly quickly. We do have retractable gear, and the airplane, we flight plan for about 163 knots. We fly quite a bit more slowly when we're loitering over areas and looking,
mm-hmm.
but that's our airplane of choice.
Yeah. Yeah. We happened to pass an aircraft on a similar flight path to us as we were going over the lake, and really just seemed to fly right past them. I mean, like they were standing still.
Yeah, and we were climbing too.
Yeah,
it's quite the high performance airplane.
Yeah, that was kind of a highlight as we were going over the lake. Oh, there it goes. Yep. That was very neat. How long does it take you to fly back from up here to? From here to Aspen, what are you going to do? Are you kind of hopping the whole way back?
We're hopping around. Okay. I haven't flight planned it from here, but I'm going to end up in Livingtown, Montana, and it'll be about a 3.5 hour flight back home to Aspen.
Yeah.
That'll be the end of this series of flights.
Yeah.
Correction, Lewistown.
And then Lewistown.
I was just in Livingston, and they're all, the names can be confusing.
I understand that, yeah. I think, Phil, was there anything else you wanted to say or ask about before we wrap things up?
No, I will say I'm not a nervous passenger,
uh-huh.
but there was a sense of relief getting off the plane onto solid ground. And that's not a reflection on the pilot, just it's nice to be firmly rooted again. And I'm just curious if Gary, you ever go through that similar sensation?
Well, I kind of have the opposite. I kind of long to get back up there.
Yeah, okay, good.
I guess we're wired just a little bit differently.
Yeah. We had a 13-year-old pilot in training on our flight, and that was fun to see too. And I think this was the first time that I thought, like, okay, I understand why this person is interested in that. Yeah. I love the experience of looking out the window and, you know, when I'm on a commercial flight or whatever. But, yeah, the idea of doing it has never appealed to me.
You're not aspiring to a second career in the sky.
No, not really. I'm glad that you're out there, Gary, people like you.
Yeah.
And this was a wonderful experience, and thank you for it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for coming. And, Phil, mm-hmm. thank you for putting it together.
I want to say thank you, and we really appreciate everything that Bruce and EcoFlight and you have done over the years. And it's a great organization. It's helped out a lot of great causes. We, the friends, are very appreciative of all of the support that we've had and look forward to doing more in the future.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Gary. And the next voice you hear will be live in the studio. We've been talking to Gary Kraft, pilot with EcoFlight, as well as Phil Huff, the executive director of the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. I'm Jack Peterson saying good morning.